This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
Yes, sir. It's hour three of the nation. Let's talk Stars hockey in control of their series with the Avalanche. As we now get to 2 days to enjoy the victory, game six will be Thursday in Colorado. Jared Sandler joining us here coming up at 4:40. He'll talk Rangers, A's, and what we got to do to get some offense going here coming up in about 40 minutes. But I'd love to talk some hockey with you. General, at your service. Salute to you. Congratulations. The Stars, you know, really giving DFW sports what we need. This is therapeutic. Okay. This is really, you know, quite a respite after what's been nearly 3 months of a personal sports hell here in North Texas. Dallas Stars apparently are saviors. There's Brian Broaddus, Lucius Alexander, Wolchuk and Schiafalo here. Carter Freeman's coordinating your video. You can watch us. 105thefan.com, Twitch, and YouTube. The thing that it's so tight, it's really a shame that one of these teams is going to have to be eliminated because they are so damn close. Mm-hmm. The great stuff last night is your money dudes performed. Pete DeBoer calling out the guys making the big bucks, and they responded, knowing that if they lost this game, they would have to go try to survive on the road in a hostile environment, and chances of that would not have been awesome. But the Stars are now being hailed for their ability to turn it on, and I don't know. What explains it to you guys? And the text is open here at 877-881-1053. It's almost surreal you've been able to do this without Miro and Robo. What do you attribute it to? Jim Neal, the GM, the head coach, DeBoer, Otter? You know, I don't think anybody thought they'd had a chance. I certainly didn't. If Miro didn't come back, I didn't think they had a chance to win this series. But they might be better than the Avs, even without them. And if they can beat the Avs, they can beat anybody in the West.
That's what's incredible. And that's one of the things that excites you about moving forward is you don't have like Winnipeg running through St. Louis right now. So there's not going to be round two where you've gone 6-7 games, emptied the tank, and you're going up against a team who's super, super fresh. Like you see in the NBA right now, Nuggets, Clippers. Hey, that's a battle. I mean, that's an incredible series. But that's going 6 or 7 games, and then here comes OKC in the next round, and they're well-rested. And so the Stars aren't going to have to deal with something like that. I think ultimately you have to give Jim Neal a ton of credit for having a team that's capable of showing up in this manner without two of their best players versus a team like Colorado. So that's first thing. But also Pete DeBoer, I mean, his team's 13-5 in games after a loss in the playoffs as the Stars head coach. So he obviously understands the right buttons to press whenever everybody feels like they're down and out.
You know, when we had Greg Wyshynski on, I think he made a good point. Like, sometimes you just kind of have a team's number, and Pete DeBoer has had success against Colorado in the postseason with the Dallas Stars. And that could have something to do with it. But, I mean, there's a reason the Stars have been the favorites in the West all season. And the only thing that caused any doubt for us was really just kind of the way they limped into the playoffs. And so that caused us to be like, okay, should we second guess this? They're not playing very good hockey right now. And then, of course, when you don't have your best player in Miro and then Jason Robertson, who had been one of your best offensive players since the Four Nations break, goes down, it's like, okay, crap, you're not playing good hockey, and then you're down to your best players. But it really shouldn't be a surprise to those that have kind of been watching the Stars all year long that they are super deep. And their forward group and how Jim Neal has constructed this thing by adding guys like Mikael Granlund at the deadline. And credit to Cody Ceci. I had my doubts about Ceci. Last night, he's got his blade pops off, and he's gimping and wounded, and he's blocking pucks, you know, just kind of rolling around on the ice. And, I mean, the penalty kill's been sensational in this series. I do think Otter has been really, really good for the most part. There's been a couple of goals maybe, but you've also had some, like, quirky goals. It benefited for the Stars last night. But I do think Pete DeBoer, you know, he has had a knack when it comes to pushing the right buttons, much like what Bruce Bochy did in that 2023 postseason with the Rangers. When he goes ahead and voices frustration, he really picks and chooses his spots. And the team usually does go ahead and reward him. And it lights a fire under him. And they don't want to disappoint him. And then you got a lot of veteran players on this squad as well. So they're not intimidated by going to a Colorado. They've been there, done that, and they've had success there. So they're not looking across the ice and saying, hey, it doesn't matter who we have. I mean, that's the beauty of hockey, right? You see Minnesota and St. Louis, for instance, and you're thinking these are teams that they were probably picked to lose in five games, maybe six games, and they could win those series. You have unlikely heroes that step up in a big way, like, you know, Michael Blackwell did to win an overtime game and score a game winner for you. You know, you get guys that you just don't expect that all of a sudden rise to the occasion in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think that's why, in my opinion, it's always been the toughest trophy to win in sports.
You know, I think there's something to be said for the moment and taking advantage of it. But the stat that Chief gave on games following a loss for DeBoer, his Game 7 record, I think maybe that deserves closer inspection. And then the 817 says the winning environment in that Stars locker room is second to none. You think about the Western Conference Finals trips, the Stanley Cup Finals trips. This team has just done so much winning. And I think there's got to be something to be said for the culture in that locker room and how resilient these guys have been for a long time.
You know, if you look just like last night too in that game and just maybe diving in a little bit deeper on the metrics and stuff, with guys winning defensive zone faceoffs, you know, Colin Blackwell winning, you know, defensive zone faceoffs, Granlund, Sagan, Duchesne, they've all were near 100% with those defensive, you know, zone draws. You know, that's something that, you know, that's getting the puck, that's getting control, and then that's getting it out of the zone. You know, when you're winning those types of those faceoffs in that area, you know, you control it and then you get that out. Now you're on the attack. And that, you know, Colorado just didn't have very much success with those last night. And you got to give those guys a lot of credit for, you know, on that end of the ice, being able to dig in, get the puck, and then find a way to get it out of the zone and then try and set up the attack, which they were able to do quite a bit last night.
It's so amazing because these teams have played so much, not only this year, but over the course of the last half decade, and they know each other so well. But, you know, the difference in your ability to execute under pressure, here comes the Avs forecheck again. Yeah. And in game four, you can't do anything about it. Now, suddenly in this game, you're making all the right fakes. Your first touch is so perfect to set up your pass. And now you're executing perfectly, but it's unpredictable whether you're going to be the team. Like, I don't know what it is. You know, the human ability to focus day in and day out is a roller coaster ride.
Yeah. That's why these series are so fun, because you live and die with every game, and you make the last game the story of the whole series. But then every game is really its own standalone thing. And it is a bit maddening where you don't totally know what to expect on a night in, night out basis. And that's part of two awesome teams. And on any given night, the more sort of locked in team with the better plan, they just lost the last one, so now they're hungrier. I mean, it's that swing back and forth in a series that makes these things so fun. As soon as you think you're down, you're back. As soon as you think you've got it, you don't.
Yeah. The feeling of satisfaction, you know, is so dangerous in sports. They say in soccer, the most dangerous lead's a 2-0 lead, right? You go up 2-0, you're like, oh, we got this.
Right.
And the next thing you know, it's 2-1, then you get nervous. And I know a lot of Stars fans were nervous last night at 3-2, you know. That play-by-play, man, he lights up, and I think I was falling asleep, and I heard, goal! And I'm like, oh, no, right? That woke me up real quick.
Is that Bob Wyshuszczyn?
Wyshuszczyn or something like that?
Yeah, but he's awesome.
The way the Stars bounce back there, I think, showed a tremendous amount about the resolve and their sports character, considering what happened in the final 2 weeks of the season. I would have thought that sinking feeling of here we go again would have had to shot through those lines, but it absolutely did not. Okay, the 214, the coordination was on the spot last night. We collapsed on Otter in moments when the Avs offense seemed close. We controlled that game offensively as well.
Absolutely.
512, I wish the Cowboys had that gritty culture. Well, it comes from leadership. You know, the GM, the coach, you got to find the kind of players that not only are going to lead that by example, but, you know, also be able to vocalize, you know, to others and newcomers that come in exactly what all goes into that. And sometimes it can be very difficult to establish that and then to bring it back. You know, even if you've had it, you know, it's no guarantee that you can maintain it. So you need incredible leadership and the people that know how intentionally install that and maintain it. And that's why I think, even though they haven't been able to ultimately win the Stanley Cup itself, they've had so much postseason success. They got some of that. They got some of that stuff that a guy like Corey Seager and Nathan Eovaldi brings to you, you know. And that's why I think champions, ultimately, once you can get it done once, you know, repeating as champion is so common, even though there's, you know, 29 or 31 other teams competing in whatever sport that you're looking at. Okay, Mikko Rantanen tying his single playoff game career high with 3 points. I thought that was huge last night, and hopefully that sets something off. An amazing goal, but he has been a point-per-game playoff competitor his entire career. For him to be pointless through the first four games of this season, that was a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, what was it, 2 assists and a goal? I mean, it was beautiful to see him and Hintz, and the forecheck was working really well. You know, going back to the leadership, I think Jamie Benn has been brilliant in this series. I think you saw it in game two, him throwing his weight around. I mean, he really set the tone. I thought it was, I mean, we talked about it with Strangis on the Wednesday. I thought it goes down as arguably his best postseason performance as a star. And then immediately, I think it was noticeable. As soon as Nathan MacKinnon banged home that second goal before Wyatt Johnson was able to score on the power play, it was Jamie Benn who laid a massive hit along the boards and really was able, again, to set the tone physically, like, boys, we are not now on our heels. We are still going to be the aggressors. And then just a couple minutes later, they get the power play opportunity, and here's Wyatt Johnson with goal number two. I think that leadership of Jamie Benn, who also, as we've talked about, him, Sagan have been here a while. You've got guys like Duchesne and Marchment that have been so close to getting to the Stanley Cup. Those veteran guys knowing, like, how many chances are we going to get? And then Jamie Benn's also going to be an impending free agent. And I think he wants to stay here, and the Stars want to keep him around as well. So you don't get a lot of chances on this, to go ahead and win. And this is one of these special teams that kind of does feel like it's got it all together. He doesn't want to waste another opportunity.
Okay, Rangers are wasting opportunities with runners in scoring position every time I turn around. And there's frustrating things to talk about with these Rangers. We do have Sands coming up at 4:40. Can we celebrate some good here? Bobby Belt posting extrapolated Wyatt Bangford numbers. You look at his last 45 games. That goes back to last September and the start of this year. You extrapolate that to over 162. You'd be looking at a 310 hitter with 50 home runs, 104 RBIs, 122 runs scored, 40 doubles, 40 steals. That's the kind of pace that a guy Wyatt Langford's on.
50-40. Yeah.
Starting to look like the best player on the team.
Yeah, but with the tying run on base, he took one swing and popped it up.
Yeah, it was bad.
You know, that part of it, I mean, I'm not trying. It's not like
what have you done for me lately? I respect where you're coming
from.
No,
it's like, you know, wet blanket guy, but you needed something. You needed him. You needed Garcia. You just needed somebody to get Semien home to tie that game and then take it. You know, I mean, it was going to be difficult dealing with Miller. We saw that the other night in Sacramento. He's just a hard guy to get through. And, you know, maybe he didn't have his best stuff last night, but the slider looked good. But the fact that they you know, he just got one swing at it and it was just a, you know, kind of a pop up. Those are unfortunate right there for me.
Yeah, he had the rare collar last night. I was projecting him to go 2-for-4 with a home run. I guess he's just saving that for tonight. But I do think now we're deep enough into this season, and maybe you need another 12 games before we get to 40. I think they might have to do something that we would never imagine here as Texas Rangers fans for decades. We have so much pitching. It's time to trade pitching for hitting.
Feels like you're playing with fire there a little bit, but I totally get where you're coming from.
I mean,
this is where we're at.
I don't know how to talk trades in Major League Baseball because so much of it goes to the prospects and the money spent and how much is this team going to pick up. But I do know the Rangers farm system is stocked with dudes. You know, you look at our young pitchers that haven't even got to the big league, some young pitchers that have been here. What if you get Gray and Bradford back before the deadline and they're pitching well and you're looking at Rocker and Leiter and teams that are in desperate need of young pitchers? I'd be willing to deal any one of those, either one of those guys. Leiter, not a future ace. Rocker, might be too hurt. I don't know. Seems like he's got a lot of control issues. Excited if he stays with the Rangers for what he's going to do for the next 10 years. Both these guys, you know, might be a good number two or number three pitcher for you. You might be looking at the Vandy boys as the 2-3 for your future. But if there's a big son of a gun that's hitting over 300 with an OPS over 1,000 that plays first base or outfield, got to do it. That's where I'm at.
I'm with you, dude. And you've seen them move on from a Cole Reagans in the past, you know, young up-and-coming pitcher. They did it for Aroldis Chapman. You do know that CY is willing to get ahead of things in a huge way. Like, you have the confidence in CY being like, okay, whatever it takes, I'm willing to do it. Hopefully Ray Davis will open up the door for that. But this is the portion of the season where I'm a little bit disappointed we don't have the Rangers extra innings with Jared on the horn with the callers. Because this is like Rangers fans are starting to get a little bit testy with the way the offense looks.
Yeah.
They could draw Jared off sides in a heartbeat right now.
Especially with the prank call extravaganza that we had over draft weekend.
Yeah, it's in the water right now.
The pump is primed for pranks. You know, I'm trying to get after Sandler here a little bit.
Maybe we should just start taking calls when he visits with us.
Ooh.
Now we just like outsource some Tolo calls. And maybe that's our best opportunity to try and get some angry sands.
I mean, the TV post game is nice. Not going to lie. I think Jared's doing a nice job there, but we do not have the possibility of Mount Sandler erupting, you know? And that was always kind of hanging in the balance on the radio whenever he went to the phone calls.
It's gone dormant.
Football's finest coming up next. Where are we taking it?
All right, we have interesting nuggets on the Cowboys' newest and most exciting running back. That's next here in the nation.
Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. Here's Eric with your football's finest.
Plenty of good stuff here in the finest, especially Cowboys related. But first, I throw it over to Walchuk in the at the news desk for some unfortunate breaking news.
Rest in peace to Seymour Wiener of the New York Mets, who has passed away. World War II veteran.
Super fan. Legend.
Beloved, yeah. One of the most beloved New York Mets in the history of their proud franchise. In fact, recently, it was almost a year ago now, on April 30th of 2024, Seymour Wiener was part of the Dollar Hot Dog Night promotion for the New York Mets.
Very
really
fond of
into the bid. He said everybody loves a Wiener. And in fact, when they put him at 97 years old on the Jumbotron, he received one of the loudest ovations in the history of Citi Field. He said he was very, very proud to be part of it. Wiener said the Wiener part of it was something that in my childhood I was teased about, but there was never the thing of Seymour Wiener. That became later in his adult life where he started getting teased. But he said to
kids weren't putting the Seymour together. It was just the Wiener that was standing out.
It was just the Wiener that caused a giggle at the time.
It's a big missed opportunity for those kids.
Seriously.
He said, quote, to me it's been so enjoyable and no way does it annoy me. Just look at all the notoriety I get out of it. He had an outstanding professional baseball career. We thank him for his service, of course, fighting for our great country in World War II. And may he rest in peace, and our thoughts and prayers and condolences to the Wiener family.
Amen. Well said.
97?
He died now in 98.
98. So he had a great run.
Well, almost, yeah.
Yeah.
He did. He had a hell of a run.
I had a heck 98. A my gosh. Great run. Yeah.
R.I.P. Okay. Jaden Blue.
Out of the blue.
This dude is very exciting. I think he's the guy that Cowboys fans are most excited about right now. Because obviously,
not Booker.
We're all ball watchers. We want to see touchdowns. Mm-hmm. We want to see explosiveness. And that's what he brings to the
table.
Trying
to score touchdowns.
I think the only thing is the fumbles that has me a little bit concerned. And Dawson mentioned the small hands. Like, there's a reason why these fumbles are happening.
It should have you concerned.
Yeah.
It had all Texas fans concerned because the fumbles would come at big moments.
Right.
And it honestly cost them a chance to play in the national championship against Washington a couple of years ago.
But we don't talk about that, right?
No, we're not. We're going to hope that he goes full Tiki Barber, mm-hmm. high and tight, and this thing's corrected moving forward.
I mean, I would think he's just doing nothing but those hand stretches, right? Where these guys, Kenny Pickett or whatever, they're spending months on end stretching their hands out, trying to get as big a hand as possible. I don't know if you can go any sort of prosthetic instrument to sizing up the hand a little bit more. I mean, I'd be willing to do whatever it takes. I think he is too true competitor. But when you look at the advanced numbers on him, really impressive stuff from Warren Sharp here. So he had the 4.28 40 at the pro day. Obviously, he's a blazer. That's the fastest in the class at the position. 73% of his rushing yards were after contact.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one in the class.
Some of the numbers on this guy are crazy.
Yeah, and you think of him as like the lightning, the explosiveness, not a guy that's running through tacklers, but you mentioned the size, Broadus. I mean, this guy's just about 200 pounds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 5'9", 196.
He's not some 185-pound scat back.
No,
like, he brings some physicality to the position as well, coupled with the electric speed. So 73% of his rushing yards after contact, that is super impressive. And I think surprising probably to most, 4 yards after contact per carry, number four in the class. 3.5 yards per carry when he was hit at or behind the line of scrimmage. So you hit him at or behind the line of scrimmage, he's still going to get 3.5 yards of pop.
Oh, he makes people miss.
Number one in the class for that. 25% target percentage, number two in the class. He's a pass catcher, and then he lined up in the slot on 16% of his routes, also number one in the class. So you have that versatility where you can move him around and get him going in the passing game there. You saw him in that Arizona State game where he was fantastic out of the backfield, but you can also line him up in the slot. This is definitely a guy to get extremely excited about. The fumbles are the only real concern here.
He dominated Clemson. I think my question, we all respect Steve Sarkisian, right? Even though he kept playing Quinn Ewers instead of Arch Manning, and maybe he's got a blind spot for who should be starting, but I just wonder why he only got four carries against Ohio State and two against Georgia. And five against Texas A&M. Like, I think there was only three games in the entire year. Well, there was another one in the preseason against Louisiana Monroe or something where he had 25 carries. But he's getting 2 and 4 and 5 a lot. Why would Steve Sarkisian not give him the ball more? He's averaging probably three quarters. I mean, okay, so you had the two early in the year, and then you had one more against Kentucky in SEC play.
He had two against Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had seven over the last 2 years for this past year.
The fumble, one in the last 11 games.
I mean, it was. I mean, the fumbles were a problem. We can't gloss over that. It's a big deal. Ball security is the premium. So, yeah, that's something he's going to have to get figured out. But he's always been a committee guy, and Texas has been spoiled by just having an absolutely loaded backfield. So he's just never been that guy that's had to carry a full share of the workload. But he does have a lot of special elements to his game. As a receiving back, he's really, really special. He is electric with the ball in his hands. But he is not a guy that's ever really been a 20-carry dude, bell cow type of back, which is why I think you're really looking at a running back by committee approach this year.
I still feel like Nick Chubb wouldn't be a bad thing to kick the tires on. I don't know what his asking price is, and there's certainly a line that you would have to draw on the financial sand there because he is not anywhere close to being in his prime anymore. But a year removed from the injury last year, it wasn't great for him, like 3.5 yards per carry or whatever. But I would still be interested in bringing in a Nick Chubb. Hopefully Maffa can give you something there as a physical back, kind of a grinded out back. But outside of Blue, there's much to be desired still in the Cowboys' running back room. Now, I did see, are you guys familiar with the nickname of Mr. Revel?
His nickname? Condor?
The Condor. Condor, yeah.
Ah!
Do you guys remember the last Condor in the DFW Sports Metroplex?
Ronald Guzman.
Big Ronald Guzman at first base, just extending out. The flexibility on that guy was ridiculous.
Dude, doing the splits and stuff is unbelievable.
But the arm length, I mean, an 80-inch wingspan. For this corner, he fits the bill, 6'2", 195. I am super excited about him. And if he's going to be wearing that number 28, that looks sharp on him. Aesthetically, extremely pleasing. I think Blue's going with a 23.
So we've got a 23 on the roster. He's not officially going by 23. There was hopes that he might because Deshard Choice was his running backs coach, who's now in the NFL. But currently 23, somebody has it on the roster. I know Tommy Arsh put that out, but he did put a clarification that as of today,
okay,
he's not wearing the 23. Maybe that happens eventually.
Okay. Well, if I told you that the SEC is on a streak right now for having the most picks in the NFL draft, how many years running do you think that would be standing true? They're on a heater. Ooh. How many years has the SEC led in terms of most picks in the NFL draft for a conference?
10.
Got a full decade strong.
Yes.
I'm going to go over. I'm going to go 15 years.
Let's go 22 years.
19 years running. Since 2007, you've had SEC leading the NFL draft with the most picks.
It's amazing.
That's definitely a dang good run right there. Who do you guys believe to have the most popular jersey for a rookie right now?
Scattaboo,
huh? I don't see him.
Genty.
I don't see him Shador. In the top 10 here. Genty's number 4 with the Raiders. Shador is number 3 with
Cam
the Browns.
Cam.
Now, got a little bit of a late start, obviously, because we didn't know which jersey was going to be until Saturday.
Travis Hunter.
Travis Hunter's a good one.
Travis Hunter is number 1 with
is
the Jags.
Is he wearing 12?
Looks like he's going with the number 12. Yeah, so he's going to stay true to that number that he wore at Colorado. So Cam Ward, who people are calling the least talked about number one overall pick that we've ever seen, certainly for a quarterback. You know, sometimes you get like an offensive lineman or something that goes one, it's not overly sexy.
Get Eric Fisher.
But for a quarterback, yeah, for a quarterback to be going number one and not be that talked about. But he does have the second most popular jersey going right now. But Travis Hunter's number one. Here was the Jaguars general manager, James Gladstone, the youngster from L.A., now taking over in Jacksonville. He makes the big trade up. Listen to him talk so glowingly about Travis Hunter.
Yeah, you know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar. And really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him, from the football field to the city to the game of football itself. Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Travis Hunter.
Bravo, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if that's not the most glowing report, what an intro right there.
Yeah. Let me get some of that.
Our dude, is he highly educated?
I want this guy eulogizing
me. He's highly something.
Wow. Is he highly?
Been hanging out with Aaron Rodgers.
Very introspective. And, I mean, just pushing the boundaries of the sport.
Did he sit down and is that a Chet?
It looked like that looked off the cuff. Unless there was a teleprompter in the back of the press conference room, he was not reading off of squat.
Okay, but maybe
that was off the dome.
You write that Chet GPT and then use it.
Maybe that was brilliant. It was good literary stuff. You know, I feel like he probably went to the Ivy League for.
Probably took some public speaking courses.
it was absolutely spectacular.
It's funny because he just looks like he's about 16 years old, got his driver's license, and he's up there,
playing general manager.
It's like he's a kid that just they got playing Madden, and he's in franchise mode, just building teams. And here he is, Travis Hunter, pushing the boundaries of what we are here as Jacksonville.
Yeah, people are calling it the glaze of the year.
I think what I heard is maybe some youthful naivete, excitement, your first draft, mission accomplished, and, probably just feeling himself a little bit too much, maybe.
Or feeling Travis Hunter quite a bit.
Yeah, but hey, good luck to this guy. Man, it's impressive to see somebody up there that I could have babysitted being here a GM. I know, Brian, you know that feeling well.
I babysitted the New England Patriots GM.
That's right.
Elliot Wolf.
And the Seahawks GM was his intern.
Yeah.
Okay, Sands the Man is set to join us next here. Jared Sandler, Rangers insider, has the pregame coming up at 6:30. What do the Rangers need to do to get some runs? That's coming up next year, G-Bag Nation, the fan. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. We got Cowboys news coming up here at 5 o'clock. Right now, let's talk with Jared Sandler about these Rangers. They're 15-14. In 10 of their 14 losses, 2 runs or less. That's hurting a little bit. We need some runs. And they're now, as I said earlier, in a spot where by midseason, we might be talking about having to trade pitching for hitting. Jared Sandler joins you now here on 105.3 The Fan, brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. Jared, how the heck are you?
Guys, I'm great. Shout out to RS Diamond Broker. It's always great to hear a nice South African jeweler on the radio station.
Yeah, salute to those guys.
Sure.
I heard they're doing some great work.
Best in the biz.
Crushing.
Best in the biz.
Does this come down to being more patient? Is that all it is? And how easy of an adjustment is that, Sandler, to get done?
Yeah, that's a great question, Gavin. So I remember I started looking into stuff like this with Rugi years ago because Rugi was super aggressive and there was a lot of data that, when Rugi would swing at pitches in the zone, he was one of the best hitters in baseball. I know that might sound silly, but like relative to other hitters, when he would swing at pitches in the zone, the damage he did was, was superb. But he swung at everything. And I try to get a sense of how much discipline can be a learned skill, and what's like that range, right? And you know, the reality is, it's not very common at all where a guy who is one of the more undisciplined hitters becomes, you know, all of a sudden like Evan Carter, Shin-Soo Choo type discipline, right? But there is room for improvement. There are room for gains in that department, and I think that's what you're hoping for out of guys. You know, you're not asking Adolis to all of a sudden be the stingiest hitter, but can you improve by 2, 3, 4, 5%? And collectively, can you know the lineup improve by, you know, 2 to 5%? Because you're right. I don't want to oversimplify it, and I don't want to say that's all it is. But I do think that, you know, the data's pretty stark that 1-0 is a lot better than 0-1, and 2-1 is better than 1-2, and any kind of favorable count for a hitter is going to yield better results. And if pitchers are giving you opportunities to be in more favorable counts, you got to take it, right? I think that, like, you look at Marcus Semien's plate appearance against Mason Miller last night. Now, you know, he drew a walk, right? It wasn't a home run or anything, but that was a situation where you could see a hitter trying to do something, but against a really good pitcher who had walked one batter all year, he stayed within himself. He drew a walk. He gave the team a chance. Now, unfortunately, they didn't capitalize in the ninth inning, but, you know, they had a chance because Marcus got on base, drew a walk. He was patient. We've seen Adolis, you know, when he is getting ahead 1-0 and he is putting himself in 2-0, 2-1 counts, just the likelihood for damage, not just getting on base, but damage is higher. And it's tough to play from behind, you know, in the count. And they're doing that a little too often, no doubt.
Well, and could you even say that about Lankford's just one pitch at bat last night there in the ninth? I mean, is that very similar to, you know, like the approach that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when assessing those plate appearances, you know, I need to know, like, why, what are you looking for there?
Right.
And if he's getting what he's looking for and he just, you know, wasn't able to square it up, all right, you're okay with that because the guy on the mound is one of the best closers in all of baseball.
Sure.
Now, if he's up there looking for a fastball and he's swinging at a breaking ball, you know, those are the, and I don't need to say anything. That's one where Wyatt's going to go back to the dugout and say,
yeah,
gosh, you know, what was I doing? You know, and so you get in those situations and it gives you the opportunity to be more selective. And you know, maybe it's not fair to, you know, I know I brought up the Semien Mason Miller. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is you don't want it to have to come down to getting to, again, one of the best closers in all of baseball. But I think Broadus, you know, to your point, there have been plate appearances and yesterday, I'm just going back looking at the game flow yesterday. You know, Adolis Garcia came up you know, at one point, I think in the sixth inning. And the bases were loaded, and right. He got three really hittable pitches. And, you know, he just wasn't able to you know, do anything with them. And those are the ones where it's like, man, you know, you feel like there's a missed opportunity. On the one pitch at bats, there's no doubt that, you know, when they stack up, especially in big moments, you kind of wonder, you know, was that the one you wanted, right?
Right.
But you know, if it was and you just didn't execute, okay, but if it wasn't, if you were looking middle in and you swung at a pitch, you know, on the outside corner, those are the things where I think, you know, hitters and hitting coaches are like, well, you know, if we're having a plan, let's try and stick to the plan. Now, the last thing I'll say is it is very easy to have a plan, and then when you're facing 103 with 92 mile an hour slider, you know, it's tough to pull it off. But yeah, I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's the challenge that these hitters have these days.
Well, but the fact that Semien was able to draw a walk. You know, especially I know that Miller in Sacramento was just electric, but it looked like last night that he had a little trouble, that his slider was the pitch that he was throwing for strikes.
Yeah, and you know, whenever a guy he walks a guy on four pitches,
right? It doesn't ever walk anybody.
Well,
right.
Yeah, he doesn't walk anyone, and then yeah, Josh Young. First pitch, he hits the ground ball. Now,
right.
Josh Young almost, you know, hit that one hard.
Hard,
it was a diving
hard.
Play
yeah,
by
yeah,
Schumann.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things is, like, sometimes you'll see a base runner steal on 3-0 because, you know, you're thinking the pitcher's just not even paying any attention to you. They're just trying to throw a strike. Well, you know, somewhat similarly, you know, a guy just walks the tying run on four pitches. All he is thinking about is, I need to throw a strike. And sometimes,
right.
You know, it might not be a good strike. It might be the strike that the hitter is trying to turn around. And so, you know, it's – I know, like, in Little League, I can't tell you how many times the pitcher walked a batter on four pitches, then you step in the box and the third base coach is giving you the take sign. And I get it. You know, I understand that different
make him throw you a strike.
Make him throw you a strike. And I think, you know, in that situation, if you're a hitter after that, you are dialing in on one pitch or one spot, or you are zeroing in on something specific. And if you get it, then you better be ready to fire away, especially against Mason Miller. And that's the thing, too. He might, you just walk on four pitches, you might only get one pitch that's hittable, and it might be that first pitch. And, you know, the reality is on that one, too, like we said, Max Schumann made a diving play. If he doesn't make that play, then the Rangers might be looking at first and second or first and third, nobody out.
Boach is clearly moving stuff around in the lineup. I mean, yesterday you got Smitty that's batting in the nine hole today. He's batting second. You got Higgy and Jonah that are back-to-back, that have been able to have some success against the A's. I mean, what stood out to you about some of the mixing and matching that Boach is trying to do to get this offense going?
Well, looking at yesterday against J.P. Sears, he put his four best hitters against lefties, 1, 2, 3, 4. And, you know, to some degree, you know, he's not just thinking, all right, what's my lineup when the game starts, but where are my opportunities to pinch hit and how do things look after that? But he stacked his four best hitters against lefties yesterday. And then, you know, today's a little bit of an interesting situation because Jacob Lopez is the starter and he's stretched out to, you know, maybe four or five innings, but he's probably not someone who is going to be able to give you the length that J.P. Sears is going to give you. And Lopez is a lefty. So, you know, you want to be prepared for one of the six righties coming out of the Athletics bullpen and not just gearing up exclusively for a lefty. But, you know, I like seeing Wyatt Langford in the leadoff spot. I think we talked, guys, you know, this offseason or maybe in spring training, and, you know, I had said that if it's not going to be Marcus Semien in the leadoff spot, I want to see Wyatt Langford. I love the power-speed combination. I love that if he gets on first and Corey Seager rips a double, that he's going to be able to score from first. I love that, you know, first batter of the game, you better be careful, otherwise it can be 1-0 if you know, with one swing, right? There's studies out there that suggest that over the course of a 162-game season, it doesn't matter what your batting order is, that the optimum batting order for a given team is only going to be about a 10-run difference and maybe equate to one more win. I just don't know. Like, I believe that the data says that, and you guys know I love the numbers. I just don't believe that in practice or in execution it plays out that way. And to me, if my best hitter is getting the most plate appearances, I'm okay with that. And I think right now the best hitter on this team who's in on the active roster is Wyatt Langford. And ultimately the two best hitters are Langford and Seager. And I like seeing them at the top of the order, and I'm curious to see how it looks with Wyatt leading off.
You love the data, and you love a good streak as well. Is there any good Ranger streak we should know about right now?
Well, there's some streaks we want to break, right, when it comes to playing close games. The Rangers, it just doesn't seem like they can, you know, get away from a close ball game, which has been taxing on their bullpen. And you know, there's streaks when it comes to, you know, obviously scoring more than three runs. The Rangers have gone six straight games scoring three or fewer runs, so we'd like to break that as well. Wyatt Langford had a seven-game hitting streak. He lost that yesterday. I'm trying to think, is there a streak I'm missing here, Mr. Chiafalo?
Not from my understanding. I think you pretty much covered it all, man. I'm just running down the street checklist right now. You nailed it.
Okay, got it. Good. I just didn't know if there was one that I was coming up zeros on.
Give me the Jungle Cat for a dong tonight for the championship ring.
I like it, guys. Yeah, I went Wyatt. He was my pick. We can only pick a guy once a week. New rules this year.
Ooh.
So I'm using my Wyatt chip. You know, it's strategic, right? But I'm using my Wyatt chip tonight. But it would be nice to get the Jungle Cat going for sure. I mean, here's the thing. If you want optimism, the optimism is that you can point blindly and probably find a guy, and the assessment of their season is, you know, there's more in the tank. And so, you know, you get a couple of these guys going, and then this thing might look a lot different.
Well, thank you, Jared. Enjoy the evening. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
See you, fellas.
Salute. There he goes. Jared Sandler brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. Join Sean and RJ tomorrow. Their firehouse tour continues. It'll be in Anna at the Central Fire Station, 305 South Powell Parkway in Anna. Proudly presented by Firehouse Roofing, Whataburger, and Firehouse Movers. Sean and RJ's firehouse tour. Wolchuk's going to be with him in the morning. Go say hi. Cowboys news of the evening time. Why they feel like they need to be so careful with this star player. That's next in the nation.